Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, April 1st. President Trump's approval ratings have been going up during the coronavirus crisis. Many of you may not know that because many people in our area are watching his daily briefings with, let's face it, some disgust. First, he downplays the threat. Then a few days later, he acknowledges the seriousness but says we're doing well in fighting it because he recognized it early. That's one pattern. You've heard all those clips. Another pattern is that if a mainstream reporter asks a mainstream question about his reluctance to act or the rosy picture he keeps painting, he paints the rosy picture again and calls the reporter something like a wise guy or a cutie pie. Here's one example from a few days ago. After Governor Cuomo sounded an alarm about the president not ordering manufacturers to make enough ventilators for New York, ABC News chief White House correspondent Jonathan Karl raised the question with the president. Here's how that went.
Are you able to guarantee, to assure these states, these hospitals, that everybody who needs a ventilator will get a ventilator?
So here's what I'll tell you. I think we're in really good shape. This is a pandemic the likes of which nobody's seen before. I think we're in great shape. I think that, number one, we've distributed ventilators. Is a big deal. We've distributed vast numbers of ventilators, and we're prepared to do vast numbers. I think we're in great shape. I hope that's the case. I hope that we're going to have leftovers so we can help other people, other countries.
Everybody who needs one will be able to get a ventilator.
Look, don't be a cutie pie, okay? You know, everyone who needs one. Nobody's ever done what we've done. Nobody's done anything like we've been able to do. And everything I took over was a mess. It was a broken country in so many ways other than this. We had a bad testing system. We had a bad stockpile system. We had nothing in the stockpile system. So I wouldn't tell me what you tell, what, you know, like being a wise guy. Go ahead.
President Trump with ABC's Jonathan Karl on Friday calling him a wise guy for asking if everyone who needs a ventilator will be able to get one. With us now is that wise guy, that cutie pie, as the president also called him, ABC News chief White House correspondent Jonathan Karl. He also has a new book called Front Row at the Trump Show. He has actually been covering Trump since he was a reporter for the New York Post in the 1990s. Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for coming on with us today. Welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be back with you.
That exchange we just played, what was it like to be on the receiving end of that?
Well, I've been on the receiving end of many taunts and insults from the president and compliments. I mean, often in, you know, the same phrase. So I'm used to hearing him go after me, but this was the strangest one ever because the context was just bizarre. I was asking what I truly believe was and remains one of the absolute central questions in this crisis. And keep in mind, I asked it just as Governor Cuomo had said that New York would need 30 to 40,000 ventilators, and we were hearing that the federal government was only able to provide a few thousand. And here the president had just at the beginning of that press conference talked about all he was doing to make sure that more ventilators were being manufactured, and he was talking about the possibility that they would be able to help other countries get needed ventilators. So it seemed like a very pressing and central question. Are you saying now that you can assure the hospitals and the governors that they will get enough ventilators so that everybody who needs one can get one? That's a basic question. I thought maybe he might say we're doing everything in our power to make sure that it can happen, but no, he took it personally, and I was trying to figure out why, and I think it's because the question put the responsibility on him. He said, if you remember, just a few weeks ago, he said, "I am not responsible for anything." He's tried to show that he's leading this effort, but that the main decisions are being made by the governors and by the local officials, which, you know, you can, maybe that's a decent approach to take, but he's tried to show that he's in command while simultaneously trying to suggest that he's not, you know, can't be held accountable for what's happening.
And on the ventilators question in particular, we played the clip last week of the president from one of his briefings deriding Cuomo for saying we need 30,000 ventilators in New York, saying that was an exaggeration and he didn't believe we needed that many. And he's resisted employing the Defense Production Act to the fullest possible degree to force the production of more ventilators and more quickly into the New York and the national supply. So why has he been resisting that? Is there a political calculation to not forcing more manufacturers to produce more ventilators more quickly and then deriding you for asking about it?
Well, I mean, there may be, but I think there is actually, honest people can have a disagreement about what is more effective in terms of the Defense Production Act. He has invoked it, his right to be able to use it to enforce individual companies to act. He's been confusing about whether or not he's actually going to do it. In regarding General Motors, he went back and forth several times in the course of a single day. But some people have looked at this and have argued that using it as a threat and enforcing the companies, or not forcing, but cajoling and urging the companies to act on their own may be a more effective way. Because if you have the federal government take over this production, it may or may not be as effective if companies that actually know how these supply chains work and how the production work can do it on their own. So I think there is a legitimate debate, and it's not my position as a reporter to say who's right about that, about whether or not it makes sense to actually take over the production or basically shame the companies to do it themselves.
If a lot of people around here tend to see him as a con man, even in the midst of this crisis, why are polls coming out showing approval of his handling of this issue up to around 60%?
So Brian, I think there's a couple ways to look at that polling. First of all, you're right. You do see, especially for Trump, incredibly high numbers. A positive. He's got more people think he's doing a good job than think he's doing a bad job. But think about presidents in times of crises. When you have a national crisis, and this is arguably the most challenging national crisis of our lifetime, there tends to be a rally around the flag effect, a rally around the president. Think of George Herbert Walker Bush after the invasion of Kuwait and how his numbers skyrocketed to the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Think about George W. Bush after 9/11. Think about Reagan after the Challenger. There's a tendency for people to want to believe that our leadership is going to help us through the crisis. In that context, Donald Trump's numbers are actually not very high. It's a pretty meager rally around the flag, rally around the president effect. I mean, he still has significant parts of the country, significant percentage of voters, of citizens who think that he's not doing a good job, and his personal approval rating is still, in most polls, under 50%.
Right, his overall approval rating is still in the 40s, while his approval for the handling of this issue has gotten into majority territory.
But not like huge majority territory.
Right.
It's not like, 80-90% that you've seen with some presidents, most presidents in a time of crisis.
There was an exchange yesterday where he was asked about another concern of Cuomo and other governors, that states are having to bid against each other and even against FEMA, against the federal government, for ventilators and personal protective equipment for the healthcare workers. We've been talking about that issue on the show for a week, and Cuomo raises it every day. He wants the president to nationalize the allocation of critical medical supplies. But Trump yesterday, and I watched that whole two-hour briefing last night. I'm never off anymore on this schedule, even doing the show from home. But Trump yesterday sounded like he never heard about that concern before. And that was one where I was hoping that another reporter would jump in and say, wait, you didn't hear about this question about states having to bid each other against each other for supplies? Cuomo's been shaking the trees on this for a week. Did you hear his answer that way as really not having heard of it or pretending that he didn't hear of it? And also to the content, why wouldn't he take that step?
Yeah, that was a really strange moment because I was with him. I don't know if you recall, he did a trip to FEMA. He's done so few trips out of the White House as this, you know, has shut everything down. But one of the he did a trip to FEMA. I was with the small group of the press pool that went with him, and Governor Baker of Massachusetts raised this exact issue with him, specifically with his ability to get the supplies, because he calls and then then there's an order from the federal government and then he can't get it, and the president listened to his concern and promised him he was going to do something to make sure that didn't happen. But that would, you know, that again, getting to the question of whether or not it should be nationalized and distributed, I mean, he's resisted that. He's wanted to, those that are closest to the problem to be able to make those decisions and take those actions. There are obvious problems with that. There's an argument for it. Again, it's not a crazy argument that the governors know more about what's needed than people in the federal government. But this is a national crisis, and you need to be able to have a national approach to it. I think one reason that he has resisted that, I think there are legitimate arguments about whether or not that is the most effective way to do it. But I worry that one of the reasons that has motivated him is again that question of responsibility. He doesn't want to be the one that is ultimately responsible. At least it appears that way.
Kylie, you know, in Virginia, you're on WNYC with Jonathan Karl, ABC News Chief White House Correspondent. Hi, Kylie.
Hello. I was wondering if you all can shed any light on how this is being reported internationally. Obviously, other countries are going to have an interest in how we're doing this and what impact that reporting might have on President Trump, since I know that he responds to certain people's opinions of him.
Do you know, Jonathan?
I don't have great visibility on how this is being portrayed internationally, but you are 100% right in the last thing you said, which is he pays keen attention. I mean, first and foremost is how he is being portrayed. I mean, whether he's boasting about the ratings of his briefings, that's one thing. But it's almost like that is the most important thing here in this grave crisis is how are people seeing how I'm doing? And it's strange, but it's not unique for Donald Trump.
I have an international sort of related question, but it definitely goes back to Trump. You know, there's news from Japan today of Prime Minister Abe using coronavirus to take more powers in that country and possibly weaken their constitution and their democracy. In Texas and Ohio, the governors have used the medical crisis as a reason to ban all surgical abortions in the state, which maybe they wanted to do anyway. People were worrying about Trump trying to seize authoritarian power before this crisis. Now, the thing we've been talking about, Democrats are asking him to take more executive power, to order private companies what to make and things like that. So do you see any sign that the president is eyeing this crisis as an opportunity to weaken the constitutional checks on his power?
You know, it's a great question. You point up the fundamental contradiction, and it's one we've seen time and time again. He speaks like an authoritarian. He appears like authoritarian. He praises authoritarian leaders from around the world. But I'm not so sure when push comes to shove, you know, how much of that power Trump actually wants. I think that he wants to be the center of attention. He wants to be the one dominating the news on this, the one that's in front of, you know, his coronavirus task force now every day doing these briefings, looking like the guy that's in charge. But he does, at least so far, and this should actually be reassuring to people that are really worried about him and what he would do, is you know, when push comes to shove, on the decision points, he has largely taken the advice of the experts. So he comes out and he says things and he tweets things that are way out there. You know, we're going to have churches filled on Easter Sunday.
Right.
And then when it comes to the actual decision, we're going to extend these guidelines till the end of April. So, you know, there's a difference. There's always been a difference between what he says and what he actually does. And for his, you know, for a lot of his critics, that actually should be reassuring. But I'll tell you one thing that I am worried about, and it's not necessarily Trump, but I am really worried about our election system in light of all of this. We've seen states that have canceled primaries. Now, the primary is pretty darn close to being over. You know, Biden is the all but the presumptive nominee. But I really worry about if there is a resurgence of this in the fall, which there may well be. If you look at the graph of the Spanish flu, late October 1918 is peak deaths. Really frightening. You know, you could have a situation where the peak of the crisis is right as we're going into the general election. We need to be prepared for that. We need to be prepared to have an election even if people cannot go to the polls. We need to be prepared for that. I've asked about it. I've asked what the federal government's doing about it. Have not gotten a reassuring answer.
Jim in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with ABC News Chief White House Correspondent Jonathan Carl. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Good morning to you both. Brian, it's been said before, you're a national treasure.
Thank you.
Really. Jonathan, the CEO of GM is a woman, Mary Barra.
Yep.
Is it possible, in your view, that I've listened to, there really wasn't a vociferous argument about price. Is it possible that the Defense Production Act, or that he used this psycho-narcissist, used that against GM because she offended him somehow? Is that a possibility?
Do you know?
Well, look, he does take personal slights very seriously. Whether or not he actually, this is, again, gets the difference between acting and doing. So I don't know if you saw the very same briefing where he, you know, derided me as a wise guy and told me not to be a cutie pie. The very same thing. Earlier on, I was asking him about his criticism of the governors of Washington and Illinois. And I was asking what specifically
we're Michigan, in this right? Washington,
I'm sorry,
and Michigan.
Michigan. Sorry, he has occasionally been critical of Illinois as well. But yes, in this case, I was asking about Michigan and Washington, and he came out with this amazing thing. It's that they haven't been appreciative enough. They haven't said nice enough things, essentially, about him. And of course, he couches also the federal workers and the Army Corps of Engineers and these great people behind me. But, you know, about the guy at the top.
And that attack on the governor of Michigan, he gendered her,
yes,
Governor Gretchen Whitmer.
Basically did a that woman situation.
Right. He called her the woman governor, whereas he called the governor of Washington the governor. Does he think that will help him win Michigan? That's such a key swing state for him.
It's such a key swing state, and he thinks about Michigan constantly in the context of can he win it again? First and foremost in his mind, if he feels he's being slighted or insulted, he hits back. And by the way, if Governor Whitmer came out and said something like, actually, I think Donald Trump's doing a good job right now, you would watch him turn in a dime and talk about what a great governor she is.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee it.
Of that actually happened in the last couple of days.
Yes,
they both started to play nice. In the book, you do criticize some members of the press for being too much like an opposition party. Who or what do you have in mind?
Well, I think, first let me ask it generally and then I'll get specific, but I think that there has been a tendency to be breathlessly and relentlessly negative about all things Donald Trump, and he has provided ample material to do that. And if you turn on, you know, the cable news, particularly at any given point during the Trump presidency, the dominant theme is, look at this outrageous thing he did or said today. And like I said, there's plenty of material that he himself provides. I use an example in the book of my own reporting. I was the first network correspondent to mention his mistake about Hurricane Dorian, and he said mistakenly that it might hit Alabama. I don't think this was a major mistake of a president of the United States, okay? But he was wrong, and the National Weather Service said he was wrong, and I mentioned it in the middle of the story. It wasn't what the story was about. I mentioned it. It freaking made his head explode. And then other people started, you know, everybody started talking about this because he brought the Sharpie out. He was doing all this. You remember
this is the one they called Sharpiegate. Right?
Sharpiegate. And if you were watching the news that week, you would have thought, like, oh my God, look at this guy. Look at what he's done. I mean, this is the most horrific thing. Now, I would humbly suggest that invading Iraq, the mistaken assumption that they had weapons of mass destruction is a bigger mistake. But if you're watching the coverage, you might think that it was roughly equal.
Well, because it plays into this pattern of he just makes stuff up. It's in his interest. Up. In that case, talk about emergencies. Like, this virus is an emergency. The hurricane was obviously an emergency, and he was drawing with his Sharpie a map of where it was going to hit, where it wasn't going to hit, or where it wasn't going to hit, where it really was going to hit, and people needed to be prepared for real.
Right. So it's not a trivial issue, but it's not, the people in Alabama were going to be okay. Even though, let's say they prepared when they didn't have to. I mean, the world wasn't going to end little mistake. And so I do think, you know, he has tried to portray the press as the opposition party. He said it explicitly. Steve Bannon said it when he was at the White House. And I just think that we, as reporters, and there are plenty of great reporters that are opinion reporters, and I applaud that, and that's wonderful. But me, as a correspondent for a news network who is striving to be fair and objective, as my, you know, and accurate, those are my touchstones. I think that if I look like I am the president's opponent, then again, roughly half the country, less than half the country, but a good chunk of the country will think everything I say should be taken with the same weight as the spokesperson of the Democratic National Committee. That's a mistake, and that's bad. And it plays right into his strategy. He told Leslie Stahl that he attacks the press. This was in 2016, because when you do a negative story, I want you to, you know, as you said, I want you not to believe it. Right. So we cannot act that way.
The virus did change our country so suddenly and dramatically that the old divides seem almost irrelevant, ones we felt really passionately about, including the abuse of power issues that got him impeached and questions of promoting white nationalism and other things like that at that level. How do you see those issues coming back or not for the fall?
Well, it is incredible to think about the impeachment process. I mean, when was the last time you heard somebody talking about the phone call with the president of Ukraine?
Right. Everybody was tired of that by the end of it anyway.
That's true. That is true. Everybody was tired about the end, and now it's like it seems like it was like this thing that just, you know, what was that? When was that? What was? But I think all of this stuff ends up being, you know, important. But this story is one of those unique stories that affects every single person in the country. We all know somebody who has or believes or is believed to have coronavirus. Many of us know people who have died. We all have children, you know, people that have kids that are home because the schools are closed. People had the experience we know people that have either we've lost a job, we know people have lost a job, we've seen the empty store shelves. This affects every single person in the country, and it's hard to imagine that this isn't front and center in people's minds, regardless of where the disease itself goes in November.
Jonathan Karl, Chief White House Correspondent for ABC News. His new book is called Front Row at the Trump Show, and he will be doing a virtual book event tomorrow, Thursday, April 2nd, that's open to anyone. It's with the bookstore Politics and Prose, and it's at politics-prose.com/event, politics-prose.com/event. Jonathan, so great. I hope you'll come on with us from time to time.
Brian, Brian, thank you. And I've always enjoyed talking to you. And I think the first time we did this was probably far too many years ago for us to either one of us to admit. You are a national treasure. I agree with the first caller. Thank you. Thank you for doing the show. And thanks for having me on it.
You're too kind. Thanks for coming on. Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is obviously also a daily coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.